What does America look like through the eyes of a child who's just left everything familiar behind? For a 7-year-old Iranian girl arriving in 1972 California, it meant the promise of Barbie dolls, colorful cereal boxes, and clean bathrooms her father had raved about. But the reality of Leffingwell Elementary School hit hard and fast. Standing before a classroom map, her mother's trembling fingers searched desperately for Iran, while 28 pairs of American eyes watched in silence. The humiliation burned deeper than any language barrier. This was the moment when different became real, when the gap between expectation and reality revealed itself in the most public, painful way possible. After school, mother and daughter wandered identical suburban streets for hours, hopelessly lost, until a kind stranger rescued them. This wasn't the promised land her father had described. It was something far more complex, challenging, and ultimately transformative. The journey toward belonging had begun, though neither of them knew how long and winding that path would be. Language became the family's greatest obstacle and comedy goldmine. The father baffled clerks with water without gas instead of still water. Hot dogs became meat of angry dogs, and pot roast, surely marijuana-related, was avoided entirely. The mother learned English from The Price is Right and Family Feud, mastering product prices but speaking without verbs, me shopping and yesterday kitchen clean. She'd shout Bob Barker at dish soap in stores. The daughter became the reluctant interpreter at doctor's appointments, parent-teacher conferences, and errands, praised for her bilingual skills while her mother resisted grammar. Yet beneath the comedy lay a deeper truth. Language isn't just communication. It's power, identity, and belonging all rolled into one. Persian culture revolves around family, reflected in language itself. Where English offers generic aunt or uncle, Persian distinguishes amu for paternal uncles, dayi for maternal uncles, shohar ame for aunt's husbands. This precision maps the depth of family bonds. When the father studied in Tehran, relatives took him in as their own son. Decades later, when cousin Darius needed housing in America, the family welcomed him without hesitation, the cycle continuing across continents. Aunt Sadiga, denied education beyond sixth grade despite being the smartest one of all, performed surgery on dying chickens with such skill that veterinarians marveled. Her thwarted brilliance fueled the father's insistence that his daughter attend university, regardless of cost. Uncle Mohammed became a doctor twice, first in Iran, then again in America at 58, studying alongside students younger than his children. At every gathering, relatives transform simple occasions into elaborate celebrations. They've even purchased burial plots together, Uncle Mohammed selecting one with an ocean view. Without these relatives, one person is merely a thread. Together, they form a vibrant Persian carpet spanning generations and continents. Having a foreign name in America became torture. Cousin Farbad, greatness, became Farthead. Brother Farshid, he who enlightens, became Fart Shit. And friend Nigar, beloved, nearly incited riots. At 12, after enduring fifth grade as ferocious, she added Julie as her middle name. Her family mocked it, but life became wonderfully easier. People remembered it, pronounced it correctly, didn't snicker. Then the Iranian Revolution hit. Being Julie meant Americans assumed she was one of them and freely shared their prejudices. Damn Iranians. Suddenly, she was an imposter in her own skin, passing as American while her actual identity became something to hide. The irony cut deep. In Abadan, she'd stood out for being too pale. In Whittier, they blended in until they spoke. In Newport Beach, they stood out among blondes. After the hostage crisis, her mother began claiming to be Russian or Turkish. Meanwhile, her future French husband, Francois, enjoyed automatic cultural cachet, sensitive, intellectual, artistic, simply for being French, while she remained forever linked to hostages and headlines. The father's favorite place was Las Vegas. Every trip followed the same ritual: 5 a.m. wake up, passing under a Quran held by the mother, 4 hours of desert priving with mandatory Denny's breakfast. At the Stardust Hotel, he'd ask for his special friend, Al, who'd miraculously find rooms despite no vacancy signs in exchange for $5 handshakes. Then straight to blackjack tables with elaborate superstitions. No hats, redheaded women brought luck, but redheaded men didn't, and foreigners were bad luck. Ironically, he was one himself. The highlight was the $3.99 all-you-can-eat buffet. "These shrimp alone are worth at least $5," he'd exclaim as they stuffed themselves, convinced they were beating the system. These trips paled beside real vacations in Iran: the Caspian Sea, company villas, drives through the Elburz Mountains. In Iran, they were secular Muslims, like most Iranians, learning about all faiths without practicing. After moving to America, school and the library made life festive, until Christmas, when suddenly everyone was having a party and she wasn't invited. Now married to a Catholic, she's a card-carrying Christmas club member whose kitchen smells of ginger and chocolate instead of the cardamom, pistachios, and rosewater of childhood Nowruz celebrations. In 1977, the family accepted a free trip to Washington, D.C. when the Shah met President Carter. They found threatening flyers calling them brainwashed cowards and Shah puppets. When demonstrators attacked with nail-studded sticks, the family fled desperately, finally paying $21 for a 3-hour sightseeing tour that saved them. After the revolution, the father's engineering career collapsed. Companies that had eagerly hired Iranians now wouldn't return calls. Post-hostage crisis, he found work at half his previous salary, yet never complained. Financial strain transformed him into a determined handyman, armed with engineering background and Time Life books. His amateur repairs left mismatched wallpaper, duct-taped walls, and reversed faucets. Yet in Iran, he becomes Daddy Warbucks, staying in luxury hotels and helping the needy with pension money nearly worthless in America, but valuable there. "I'm a rich man in America too, I just don't have a lot of money." Francois secretly dated for 6 months before meeting the parents. Dating was foreign to Iranians whose marriages were arranged. At a Persian restaurant, he devoured an enormous meal and questioned the mother about ingredients, knowing Middle Easterners love to feed people. Despite hoping for an Iranian doctor, she embraced him. "He will be like a third son to me." The wedding revealed stark contrasts. Francois' side included 4 family members due to feuds. The Iranian family invited 140, 181 showed up. They held Catholic and Persian ceremonies, the latter featuring the sofra with symbolic items like mirror, candles, and honey. Every Thanksgiving, the family blends Persian dishes like shrimp curry and baklava with traditional turkey. The father gives thanks for living in a free country. She expresses gratitude for pursuing her dreams despite being female. The lesson: home isn't defined by geography, but by love. Belonging comes not from fitting perfectly into one culture, but from embracing the beautiful complexity of being shaped by multiple worlds, weaving them together into something entirely your own.